It's to the best of our knowledge. I'm Ann Strainchamps. Do you remember the first time you felt the call of the road?
I was at Colby College, which is one of these ivy-covered liberal arts schools.
Long-haul trucker Finn Murphy.
My parents and I were walking down this leafy walkway. Somebody's playing guitar under a tree, and there's a couple kids throwing frisbee, and I said, I'm not coming back here. I'm going to sign up with North American Van Lines, and I'm going to become a driver. My father, who had never gone to college, and that was the one thing he didn't accomplish in his life, he said, you've done 3 years here, just one more year. Why don't you just come back and finish? And I said, because I'm afraid it's going to finish me off first. When we got home, he actually gave me a bill for 3 years' tuition, which he expected me to pay back. I looked at it, and I was shocked. I couldn't believe that he was doing this. And I flung it back at him, and I cursed at him. And he looked at me, and he said, don't use that language in my house. And I said, I'm not going to use anything in your house. And I picked up my duffel bag, walked out of the house, and went down the street to where my truck was parked. It was to be my first day as a truck driver. And my parents and I didn't speak for 2 years.
Everybody loves the road, but some people love it more than others. Finn Murphy found his career and his calling on America's highways. He's the author of The Long Haul, A Trucker's Tales of Life on the Road. And the first thing he told Steve Paulson is that he's not just any driver with a big rig. He's a long-haul mover, or as truckers say, a bedbugger.
We've got bedbuggers, those are the movers. You've got the live animal haulers, those are the chicken chokers. You've got the flatbedders, those are the skateboarders. You've got the hazardous material people, those are the suicide jockeys. Yeah, so everybody's got a nickname.
And when you say you move people or you move families, I mean, what you're saying is you load all of their stuff. You load their lives into the back of your truck.
Yes, and we pack their lives. I mean, the moves I do now, people don't lift a finger. A more or less typical example, I had one a few months ago. A man was moving to Vancouver from Connecticut. We walked in, my crew of seven movers and myself. He finished his coffee. He loaded his family into the limousine. They took off for the airport, and we washed the dishes, stripped the beds, packed every single carton, loaded the truck, put his car in the truck. And then at the other end, we unpacked everything, put his dishes back in the break front, made his beds. This is full service move. These things cost, $70,000, $80,000.
I'll say full service. My God, you even washed the dishes.
Sure, why not?
What about life on the road? Do you like that?
Well, it's more comfortable now than it used to be. The trucks are better. I've got a nice brand new sleeper in the back. I've got a Sealy Posturepedic mattress. I've got 600 count sheets in the sleeper. I've got a feather duvet, and I've got a microwave oven, a refrigerator, a desk. It's actually very nice.
You do not sleep in motels, in other words. I mean, you sleep in your truck.
Most of the time. I sleep in a motel if I have to spend a few days or something like that, but there's no reason to. My truck is cleaner than most motels, and it's certainly cheaper. And my mini bar has Gatorade in it, and it's not $8. So, yes, I sleep in the truck.
So I'm curious about what life on the road looks like from the trucker's perspective. I mean, any of us who have driven cars on a highway, with their trucks whizzing by us. And I guess I'm wondering, is there anything we should know about what you do or about, what trucks are like, as we're driving by? I mean, what don't we see in your life or in your rig?
Well, let's start with what we do see, because we see everything that people do in their cars.
You're checking us out.
Absolutely everything. Yeah. So if you've driven by a truck driving a car and you've been in the passenger seat, have you noticed you look up at the truck, at the driver, right, and then he looks back at you? So that happens every time. It's some kind of telepathy thing. I don't know how that happens, but I know when somebody's looking at me.
And do you like that? I mean, is that meaningful at all, that moment of eye contact?
It can be. It depends on what people are doing. Sometimes you have the kids doing the arm thing so that you hit the air horn. Sometimes you just have somebody look up and then you get this, you can see they're sort of wistfully looking over and wondering, like your question is, well, you know, what kind of life is that up there with that guy? So that's nice. I guess what I was saying about we can see everything what people do in their cars is most people are usually doing something else in addition to driving. You want to know what the main events are that people do in their cars? People are eating. People are spilling liquids.
Really? It happens that often?
Oh, yeah. It's not just you, Steve. So they're disciplining the kids in the backseat. They're texting and putting on makeup. But here's the number one activity for American drivers is they are working on their relationship with the person in the passenger seat. And you can tell that from the body language, from the index fingers, from the shrugs. There's a lot of romances being worked out here. Mostly it looks like there's some conflict. Every once in a while you get to see a romantic moment that's not in conflict, which is very pleasant but also very rare.
It sounds like you are kind of writing the novel in your mind. You know, what's going on in that car as you drive by?
Yeah, that's correct. I am. And I'm also writing the novel when I'm going through communities and towns and start thinking about what's changed in terms of community character, what's changed in terms of what's going on in America.
Does the country look different now? Has America changed?
So there is the denuding or the hollowing out of downtowns all over the country. You might think that it's just happened to your town or Joe Smith might think it only happened to his town, but this has happened in, you know, 15,000 towns around the United States. The core districts are denuded of locally owned stores, and then all the new commercial development is in the big boxes on the outskirts. I don't think that's good for community character. I don't think that's good for sense of place. I don't think it's good for middle-class jobs that were there that are no longer there. That's one big change that I've seen, for sure. And then another big change is how the heartland, the Midwest, from St. Louis to San Bernardino. I mean, there's nothing in the middle of the country anymore. It's a corn monoculture, and there's no towns at all.
And I mean, that was not the case when you were first driving.
No. So this was in 1980. It had begun. Mm-hmm. But no, that wasn't the case. There was all sorts of, you know, vibrant towns along U.S. Route 6 goes from Cape Cod to San Francisco. U.S. Route 50 goes through Kansas, Garden City, Kansas, places like that. You know, these used to be very vibrant small communities, and there was one after another after another after another, and it's all gone. I don't know where it went. I don't know how it went that way, but it's done.
Hmm. So is this a beautiful country to you or not? I mean, from what you're saying, maybe it's less beautiful than it used to be.
Well, it depends on the day, Steve. So I do have a passage in there where I got really sort of dark and cynical. I think I said something to the effect of, if you wanted to do a tourist poster of the United States, instead of doing a Vermont church with a white spire, why don't we do the real thing, which is a convenience store with a Subway franchise inside and an underpaid immigrant mopping the floor, and outside somebody's holding a piece of cardboard saying anything helps. That's true. And it's not all the truth, the entire truth, but that is part of the truth. And yes, is it beautiful? In many, many, many places it is. As I said, you know, I think the New Jersey Turnpike is beautiful. I also think the Rocky Mountains are beautiful. I don't think replacing every truck stop restaurant with a Subway franchise is particularly beautiful.
You also say that there are moments that are just total adrenaline rushes, like driving into New York City. You have a great passage in your book where you describe what this is like going into New York City. Could you read that?
I would love to read that. So here we go.
Okay.
Coming into Metro New York from points west or south has always supercharged me, but doing it in a big truck is pure adrenaline. This is the closest I've ever come to feeling the true essence of life on the road. I've got a hard, muscled body, a big, comfortable new tractor hauling a 53-foot moving trailer, grooving with my killer sound system, a 30-ounce Dr. Cola in the holder. Then there's the whistle of the supercharger as I shift into 13th gear, the whoosh of the air dryer, my mouth slightly sour, arms shaking from the pounding of the wheel, making money, setting my own schedule, the Manhattan skyline on my right, flying fast and furious on my way up to home plate in Connecticut. Me and the monster truck are hurtling through 16 lanes of the most intense, dangerous, and exhilarating piece of roadway ever devised by man. And I'm the king of it all, with my truck, my tunes, and my big independence. All the stories, the longings, the dreams, the books, the movies, the songs, the great American dream of chucking it all and hitting the road. Well, right at this moment, I am the song.
That is fantastic.
Thank you.
Kerouac in a truck.
But I have more focus. I'm actually going somewhere. And I'm actually paying my own bills.
Finn Murphy's book is called The Long Haul, A Trucker's Tales of Life on the Road. He was talking with Steve Paulson.